Good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with Marty Taylor, a 24-year Navy SEAL veteran who trained candidates for the Elite Special Ops Force. He is the president and co-owner of Amphibian Multisport in Libertyville, a training facility for endurance athletes. Marty has competed in 9 Ironman triathlons, including 4 trips to the Hawaiian Ironman World Championship and numerous marathons and cycling events. Marty, thanks so much for being here. It's my pleasure, believe me.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim.
Hey, man, lots to talk about. And before we get into your endurance sports and all the triathlons and everything else, your Navy career is pretty darn interesting. And particularly the Navy SEAL part, I guess. Have to ask you, at what point did you know, gee, I want to be a Navy SEAL? What triggered your interest in something like that?
Top Gun.
Really? Tom Cruise, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, he's hot. In, I guess, 1986 or 7 when the movie came out, I had gone with a buddy. We rode our bikes down to the theater and went and saw this movie.
Now, how old were you at the time? Let's say a teenager or something?
I had just turned 17.
Okay, 16. So this is very impressionable for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, right, yeah. And throughout that movie, and if you've seen it, most of us have, I decided I want to be a Navy pilot.
Cool. Okay.
I left the theater, got on my Schwinn, and rode about a mile and a half straight to the recruiter's office.
No kidding. And right after the movie?
Right after the movie.
Wow.
Walked in, and I still remember him. Gunner's Mate Chief Mike Baker says, "Good morning, welcome. What would you like to do?" I said, "I want to be a Navy pilot." And he said, "Great." He goes, "Do you have any college?" And I said, "No." He says, "We can get that." I said, he asked me, "If how's your eyesight?" I said, "Kind of bad." He goes, "Well, we can't help you with that."
Hmm.
He basically told me, he says, "Well, run along, figure out what you want to do, come back and see me." You know, he knew how old I was. He knew I had another year of high school at least to go.
Right, right.
And so I did. I went home. My father had been in the Navy during the Vietnam era for about just one enlistment. And that night we talked about it. We kicked it around. I said, "Well, Dad, I don't want to just go sit on a boat and float around the ocean. I'd like to do something cool and fun."
Yeah, yeah.
And he went down this litany of, you know, jobs that he thought would be great for me to do after I got out of the Navy. And he finally said, "Well, you could be a SEAL." I said, "Well, what's that?"
So you didn't even know what a Navy SEAL was at the time.
At that time, most people didn't.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, there was no
internet. That's before the Demi Moore movie, and then there was another SEAL movie I saw, too. Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I asked him what it was. He said, "Well, they're like Green Berets," because we all know what Green Berets are, because of John Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "But they do a lot of diving." Well, he says, "Diving, I'm thinking Jacques Cousteau, coral, pretty fish, that kind of thing." I said, "Well, heck, I'll just do that." And that was about my decision-making process. I said, "Well, I'll just do that."
Wow.
And I went back the next day, and Mike was still sitting there. And I walk in. He's got his feet on his desk reading the Dallas Morning News. And he says, "Hey, you're back." I said, "I know what I want to do." And he says, "What, be a SEAL?" And he never even looked over the newspaper. He says, "Be a SEAL?" And I said, "Yeah, did you talk to my dad?" He goes, "No, I was just joking."
Oh, my gosh.
He says, "Son, you know what you're getting into?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely."
I assume you did not know what you were getting into at the time.
Not even close.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your next step then? You still had to graduate from high school, and then did you go enlist at that point then? Or
I did.
From Texas. We can tell a little bit by the wonderful accent.
Just
there.
A little bit.
Just a little bit.
It's polished.
Yeah.
So that was the summer between my junior and senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Navy has a program called the Delayed Entry Program, so you can dep in up to almost a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually enlisted in the Navy the summer between my junior and senior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on about my life. I wasn't scheduled to go to boot camp until the following summer after I graduated. So a month after I graduated, a year later, I went to boot camp. And that's regular Navy boot camp. Everybody has to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, they had a boot camp in Orlando. So I went to Orlando for 8 weeks.
Okay.
And I say it to this day that Navy boot camp was harder on me emotionally than SEAL training was. Because this is the first time I'd ever been away from home.
Okay.
Really, my first plane ride ever in the world was to fly to boot camp.
Wow.
Yeah.
My guess is you've been all over the place by now.
Yeah, I've taken a few more since then.
Spoken like a Navy SEAL there. Hey, so I'm going to jump a little bit then. So you're in the service. Then you have to become a candidate, don't you, for the – how does that all work? What's the steps? What's the process? I mean, you don't just jump into it. Don't you have to have certain skills or requirements before you even consider being a candidate for the SEAL program?
That's right.
They don't take just anyone, right?
They don't. They have a litany of requirements you got to meet, and for most of us, you have
to. What are just a couple? I know you don't have to mention all of them, but there's just a couple physical things you might have to do before you can even consider being a candidate.
Correct. The physical aspect is what most people
focus on
and are worried about. You know, we say the training is 90% mental, which is pretty accurate, I think. But you got to be able to swim 1,000 meters. The entrance test is a 500-yard swim.
Oh, okay.
In a given time limit.
And that would be how many lengths, just to kind of, for people who are wondering?
Depending on the pool, it could be 10 or 20 lengths.
About 20.
20 or 40 lengths.
Okay, yeah.
And most of the time, the test is given in a 50-yard or 50-meter pool.
Okay.
And it'll be at an established Navy facility most cases.
So 10 laps.
Right.
Okay, back and forth. 50 yards each. Okay. We're just trying to find out. So that would be like at least one entrance to do it.
Right.
Okay.
So you'll get out of the water. You get a 10-minute break. You change. You put on dry clothes. You come back. You have to do 2 minutes of push-ups, 2 minutes of sit-ups, and then 6 or 10 pull-ups, depending on what the standard is right now. And you get a 2-minute break between those. If you miss it by a pull-up or a push-up, you're done. You can come back and retry.
Okay.
Later, but
you got to keep going for 2 minutes.
You do. You got to keep going for push-ups. I believe the standard is you got to do 42 push-ups.
Okay.
Sit-ups, I believe it's 50.
Okay.
And which isn't out of this world.
No, I was going to say it's not. At least to be a candidate, it's not all that far-fetched.
Right. Yeah. But like everything, we have standards.
Right.
And if you don't come down and low enough in your push-ups, we don't count it.
Mm-hmm.
We had a number of students that would do 70 or 80 push-ups, but we could only count 30 of them, and they would fail.
Okay.
So there's a litany of physical requirements that you come through, and you have to be healthy. You can't have any, serious existing issues. And then there's you have to place high enough on the military ASVAB test.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the exact number is, but you got to be smart also.
Mm-hmm. Think on your feet, I would think, too. I would think that'd be a huge requirement. Yeah.
I mean, the saying in our community is shoot, move, and communicate. So
shoot, move, communicate.
Right.
Okay.
And you can't do that if you're a dummy. you absolutely have to think on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
So a big percentage of the attrition rate going through SEAL training is due to academics.
Okay.
Yeah. People don't realize that, but you learn charge calculations, diving physics.
Let's talk about the diving thing. You really didn't mention that. I guess now, okay, well, you're now a candidate. You're in the school itself, where I guess, I don't know what the washout rate for something like that is. Let's say if you actually are able to have the requirements and become a candidate, what's the washout rate for that? I mean, how many people actually become SEALs out of that number?
Right, so currently, if you get accepted into the program, you'll go to boot camp with a boot camp division or company of guys wanting to be SEALs, EOD or divers, or SWIC, which is the boat drivers in our community, combat crewmen. So you'll all be in the same boot camp division.
Okay.
Of the 100 guys that want to be SEALs.
Yeah, yeah.
So you all graduate boot camp.
Yeah.
If you graduate boot camp, and virtually everybody does, you'll come to Naval Special Warfare Preparatory Course. They call it BUDS Prep.
Okay.
Of those 100 guys, 95 of them will go on to SEAL training.
To
SEAL training.
Boy, there's a lot of... This is a real pyramid here. Okay.
It's a huge pyramid.
Okay. It really is. I feel like I'm midway up here. Okay, up the pyramids.
Right.
Okay, so 95 of that will make this other program.
Right. So we'll take the original 100 guys who actually started the program.
Right. And they might have not made it because they couldn't do X or Y or Z.
They could have shorted themselves by a push-up. Or a lot, and I say this all the time, and I'm a big proponent of it, be responsible for 100% of everything you do. 99% of everybody who doesn't make it through the program chooses not to be there in one form or the other. If they didn't make the push-up requirement, it's because they chose not to train properly. They don't want to feel like it's their fault. And I got the phrase, "Chief, I'll do anything to stay in the program." And my response is, "We'll do one more push-up when you're supposed to."
We're going up the pyramid. We're not done yet, though.
Right.
Okay.
If it's a mountain, we haven't even gotten to the tree line yet. We're still down in the valley.
I'm starting to see the bighorn sheep.
they're a few months away.
Okay. All right. So then how many – you said there's 95 in this, though. So what do those 95 go through? What kind of training are they now going through to get to that top of the pyramid to be a SEAL?
Well, once they take their exit test from here, they'll all get on the same plane together, and they'll all fly to San Diego together. Mm-hmm. And they're received by the instructor cadre in San Diego.
Okay.
And these guys are a different breed than the guys up here.
Right.
These are.
When you say up here, what are you referring to?
At Great Lakes Naval Station.
Yeah, right.
Where the preparatory course is held. We don't coddle the students.
Where you teach, we might add. Or I did teach.
Right. We did teach. We get them. We just hone the knife a little bit.
Okay.
Sharpen the edge. These guys have already showed up to us in pretty good physical shape. We just get them physically more prepared up here. And this program
to get to San Diego.
Correct. Mm-hmm. The program here at Great Lakes consists of two physical evolutions a day and one classroom evolution, and it takes the entire day. And they do that for 8 weeks. So by the time they're done, they should be mentally prepared to go as much as they're ever going to be. They pass the standards to get on the plane to go to San Diego as a class. They've already been assigned a class number.
Mm-hmm.
And to back up, SEAL classes are pretty simple. They started back at class 1, and now they're above class 300. My graduating class was class 166. If someone tells you that, yeah, I was SEAL, but I don't remember my class number, it's like forgetting your last name. It doesn't happen. So...
Wow.
So they'll be assigned their class number here.
Okay.
Then that starts to build cohesion because nobody makes it through training alone.
Okay. Okay.
That's why the nickname for the SEAL community is the teams, because we do everything together. You can't do what we do by yourself.
Okay.
They'll get to San Diego. They'll start roughly.
And this is a team that's getting to San Diego. So
it is. It's a class.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call them, class 300. Shows up in San Diego. They get off the plane at North Island Naval Air Station, which is right there north of Coronado. Coronado is where
I'm familiar with you. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
Coronado, California is where all the magic happens. That's where we turn people into SEALs.
That's the spot. Okay.
That's the spot. Of those 95 guys, they'll start training. They'll go through a 2-week initiation period, and then their actual class, their SEAL training, will start, and it'll be 6 months long.
Okay, it's 6 months.
Right.
6 months of what exactly? And by the way, we don't have to get it to everything, but just some of the things that would be kind of interesting. Right?
The initial phase is you have first, second, and third phase. Your initial phase is kind of a weed out process. It's extremely hard. It's demanding on the guys. There's not a lot of rest. There's constant movement, and there's not a lot of technical skills involved. But it is a hardening process.
Sleep deprivation.
You'll have that the entire time. Around the fourth or fifth week of training, those who remain will go through Hell Week.
So people are kind of dropping little by little by little.
Yeah,
those that will remain. So by the fourth or fifth week, we started with 95. Are we down to – I know there's not a specific number, but
we'll say the fictitious class of 300 got to San Diego with 95 guys.
Okay.
By the time Hell Week starts, they'll already be down to about 60 guys.
Jeez.
And that's in the first month because it's a shocker to a lot of kids. I say kids. The average graduating age is between 23 and 25 years old.
Sure.
But these guys will go through, and I say kids, not to demean them at all. They're men. They're coming into the Navy to do the hardest job possible during a time of war.
Right.
So we have lots of respect for these guys, and we have to train them, but we have lots of respect for these guys that come in. These guys will get to the start of Hell Week with 60 members. There's been many classes in the past who lost over 50% of their class in 5 days.
Good gosh.
They start roughly on Sunday afternoon, and they don't stop until Friday night.
By not stop, is it just a couple of things that they go through that would make them drop out? What would be that?
It's different for everybody. Cold water is an amazing thing. It'll make people do things they never would have done before. It'll harden some guys, and it'll have other guys running for the hills.
I've got to explore that a little bit. I mean, I've taken a cold shower. I've lived through it, but I think you're talking about something else here.
Well, I think it's a deep, mild hypothermia for 5 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And you're constantly monitored. They have a medical staff that's
top-notch. Before you get to the middle of the pyramid, right. It sounds like it's pretty dangerous.
Well, they have to make sure that the people that they teach to shoot, to blow up stuff, to dive, are actually there for the right reasons. They have to sift through all these guys and find the guys that are really worth training, to put it honestly.
Right.
Because you don't want to pour millions of dollars into a guy.
Yeah.
And then put him through Hell Week and have him quit.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So they'll get through Hell Week. And Hell Week is what everybody thinks of as SEAL training. They think the entire 6 months is like Hell Week, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
After Hell Week, you're somewhat mentally invincible. At least I was, and it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I say Hell Week for me was the best, worst time I've ever had.
The best, worst time I ever had.
It was fantastic. And to this day, I still remember all the first names of the guys in my class. I'm still in touch with a lot of them because it's a huge bonding experience, if you can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, no one else has gone through this but that group of guys, and
right.
Who else can you relate to about that experience, I would think.
Right, and there's things that happen in Hell Week. Every Hell Week's a little different, and they say you get 4 hours of sleep a day during Hell Week. You don't. Mm-hmm. I think we got 4 hours of sleep that week. and it's amazing what you can do, because you get to a point where, well, I can't do any more, and you do.
I would think some guys might get sick. I mean, literally, but you just keep going.
Well, you do. Yeah. Some guys go into it with injuries.
Flu or something.
They monitor you. They they make you eat 4 times a day. You're eating every 6 hours, like a meal. You'll be so tired, though, that when they take you to the galley where you eat, guys will fall asleep with a spoonful of peas coming to their mouth, and they'll drop the spoon. Guys are... The second and third night of that week are so hard because you're mentally supposed to be going, you're breaking through your sleep cycle, and that's harder on a human being than like going without food.
Yeah.
But by the end of the week, it's hard to explain. The commanding officer of the base will come out and secure you from Hell Week. And when you were running 2 hours ago, you can hardly walk now, and your knees buckle. And everybody's experience is different. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the real training starts.
And now this is the 6 months of real training.
Right. After you'll have about 4.5 months.
Oh, 4.5 months, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you'll learn demolitions, how to blow things up. And it's very precise. We don't just load up a lot of explosive on something and make it go away. Sometimes you just need to cut a cable. Sometimes you need to blow the axle off of a car. So
I assume most guys coming into that have little experience doing that before they get there?
Zero.
Okay, so now this is a completely new technique that you have to learn.
Right.
And learn it well.
Right, yeah. And you know, shooting on the other hand, like I was raised hunting growing up. A lot of guys have shot or hunted, or they were police officers before they came in, or they were so sometimes they have a skill set already.
Right.
Or they have bad habits that they've got to overcome.
Mm.
Because... the SEAL teams have the best shooting instructors in the world, as you can imagine. And that's just for your basic SEAL, if there is one. Later on, after you've gotten into the SEAL teams, you could go to sniper training and become a sniper. And then you really take your skills to a different world.
Yeah, Olympian, I would think, practically. Yeah,
very close.
Yeah.
And some of our instructors in the past have been national shooting champions. It's amazing to watch some of these guys shoot. And I got to go to sniper school. I got to be a sniper instructor for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
And that was extremely interesting and very rewarding. It's fun. You know, and again, I'm a hunter. I don't want to just say I love guns, but I like shooting sports.
Sure, sure.
and I'm still 100.
Well, it's a skill set that you have.
It is, and it's very scientific. It's very it's very logical. So if you can
breathing and
reading wind, understanding what different bullets do, so it's interesting. So all these guys who go through SEAL training, they learn about all these things. They learn about ballistics. They learn about explosive charge calculations. What this kind of explosive does that doesn't do. They learn that. And for me, third phase, the last 2 months of training was diving.
Now, did you know anything about diving before?
Nope, okay. I could hold my breath for a long time. I was on the swim team in high school, so
That helps.
It absolutely did.
Yeah, I mean, mentally, that's got to help. I mean, you know that you can swim a certain distance.
A big part of SEAL training is being comfortable in the water. So, and we see it all the time. You'll see swimmers, high school swimmers that come in.
Yeah.
And the swim portion of it's a joke to them. I don't want to say it's a joke to me. It's hard because the water was cold. But if you're comfortable in the water, you have a leg up.
Right.
And swimmers are typically, they have a lot of core strength.
If
you're strong through the core, you're going to be strong everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But diving was, it was an eye-opener. We dove twice a day for a month.
And, jeez.
We dove three different kinds of diving rigs. One of them was a pure oxygen rig, which tends to dry everything out. And what a lot of people don't know that oxygen becomes toxic if you go too deep.
And if you come up too quick, you get the bends.
You get the bends. You got to be real careful.
It's
correct. You'll get nitrogen infused into your blood. So if you come up too quick and don't give it a chance to get out, that's what they call the bends.
Right.
And it'll form bubbles in blood vessels or in your joints, so you'll get pain.
Be fatal, actually.
It can absolutely be fatal, especially if this occurs in your brain or around your heart or lungs.
Do you have to be able to get to a certain depth if you're a SEAL in terms of the dive training at some point?
They have.
Or does that not matter?
They'll have you do what's called a bounce dive. Mm. And typically the only reason that you can't get down to a given depth is because you can't clear your sinuses or your nose. Mm-hmm. And you may just have a stuffy head.
Okay.
But SEALs aren't made to go deep. They don't need to. Everything that we deal with is in the top 20 feet of the water.
Okay.
I mean, if you think about the hull of a ship,
yeah,
most of them only draft a few feet. So if we're going to go sink an enemy ship and put a bomb underneath it or something like that, we don't have to go very deep.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you practice that kind of stuff?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious. Okay, so they will have they've rigged up some sort of prop or something and you practice on it?
Oh, no, we'll go practice on the Navy ships that are in San Diego Bay.
Oh.
Yeah, they know we don't blow them up, obviously. the U.S. Navy tends to frown on that. But most of your dives, the second half of your dive phase, will all be on live ships, and you'll swim up underneath some enormous ships. You get underneath a carrier, it's flat.
Yeah.
So if you're underneath, say, a frigate or a smaller vessel, and you want to know which way's out, how to get out from underneath the ship.
Yeah.
You blow bubbles and you watch which way the bubbles go, and that's how you get out from underneath the ship if you're in an emergency. Underneath a carrier, because it's flat, the bubbles just sit there and stare at you. They don't go anywhere because it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, so then what? I mean...
You always have to know where you're at. And you're never alone. You always have a dive buddy with you.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So you have somebody who's physically attached to you. And we have what's called an attack board. It'll have a compass and a depth gauge on it. So we'll be a mile and a half, 2 miles away across the bay in an enemy harbor, and we'll take a bearing on a ship. We know how far it is. We go under. We know how long we have to swim at a given speed, and then we should hit it dead on. And that's called combat diving.
Okay. Now, I assume you plan for contingencies, too.
Always.
Do they throw stuff at you that if X goes wrong, you're ready for Y? You know what I'm saying? They plan on you miscalculating, so all of a sudden you have to think on your feet type of thing, because that could happen in combat.
Right. Because SEAL teams are such a small force,
mm-hmm.
typically we never stand and fight a superior force in size. If we're doing a combat dive on a ship and they start throwing grenades over or something like that, or we sense that there's anything gone wrong with the mission, We have a litany of checklists where we abort the mission and back out of it.
Okay.
If we come under fire and things go south and we've got to leave, typically our number one option is to haul ass. The best way to avoid a fight is not be there.
Haul ass 101.
Haul ass 101. And that's a skill set in itself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because there's different ways to do it.
Oh, man, Marty, I tell you, I am just riveted here, and I don't want to stop, but we're going to have to take a break.
Okay.
And by the way, if you just joined us, we are talking to Marty Taylor, a Navy SEAL veteran. I would like to come back, talk a little bit more about SEALs. We do have to get to triathlons and, of course, your new complex as well, the facility. Gosh, this has just been riveting. Anyway, more after this. Stay tuned. Of course, his journey going back to the 1980s. Don't stop believing. And I tell you, Marty, you are definitely making me a believer out of the Navy SEAL program. If you just joined us, we are talking to Marty Taylor, a veteran Navy SEAL and also triathlete, which we're going to get into in just a moment. And later on in the program, talk a little bit about his new facility, or I should say remodeled facility, new location in Libertyville, amphibian multisport. But we were just finishing up the Navy SEAL program, or at least the training process, and, you know, we started with the pyramid, and I just want to finish up one quick thing. So when it's all said and done, we're in San Diego, and you've had this 6 month of training, and now I think we're at about 50% of people. You said most of those people then probably make it. Is that probably true then?
Right. Out of the fictitious 100 or so that went to boot camp, and
exactly.
95 on to San Diego. Typically, you'll have between 15 and 20 of those original guys actually graduate from SEAL training.
Okay.
So the attrition rate hovers between 80 and 85%.
Wow.
Some classes are better than that, and some are less than that. They've had a class of four guys graduate.
Well, I guess that's why they call it the Elite Special Ops Force.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that go into that. It could be the time of year that people come in, the mix of students in the class, the weather. The weather has a lot to do with it, because everybody has a breaking point. SEALs aren't superhuman.
Right, right.
They're regular guys. They bleed like anybody else. They get cold like anybody else. And everybody has a breaking point. Whether or not training finds that breaking point in you, hopefully it doesn't, and you're successful, is, you know, that there's so much that goes into that. It could be genetics. It could be the way you're raised. You know, we say we make SEALs in San Diego. I think that's only partially true. I learned a lot of what I am and who I am from how I was raised. My father held me accountable in everything I did. And that would be your number one key to success if you want to become a SEAL, is your maturity level and your ability to take responsibility for everything you do and everything that happens to you. As part of my in brief to the students here at Great Lakes when they come into the program, I tell them, I'll have a couple of requirements on you, but one of them is be responsible 100% for everything that happens to you. I said, I don't care if you get hit by a bus walking across the street, it's your fault. Should have left sooner. I don't care if the bus driver's blind and drunk, it's still your fault. Take responsibility for everything you do, and you'll never have issues, and not just in this job, but in life in general.
That's tough love.
Well,
not tough love, but I would tell you, I think for the average person, that's we all like to play the blame game,
except for the
four people who make it through the Navy SEAL program. But
we learn that as kids sometimes.
Yeah,
it's easier to blame Jimmy
right.
for, you know, whatever, or the reason I'm late is because the train stopped me. Or
Right.
If you know that you're accountable and 100% responsible for everything that happens to you, those instances will become few and far between. And I think in business, in life, in love, everything, you'll become more successful.
Yeah. Yeah,
You know, that being
it's hard to disagree with. Yeah,
right. It's it's hard to execute in real life.
Yeah, that's the tough part.
It is. So we have these, we'll call them 18 guys that have graduated from SEAL training now. That's the basis of SEAL training. They're still not SEALs yet. They have to go on to SQT, SEAL qualification training, before they actually become denoted to SEALs. But prior to that, they go and learn how to jump out of an airplane.
Never ends, does it?
It never ends.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Of course.
We used to, up until about, 5-8 years ago, we would go to Army Airborne School. Every SEAL that graduated from SEAL training would then go directly out to Fort Benning, Georgia, and go through Army Airborne School. Then we'd go through 3 weeks of airborne training, which after we got through SEAL training, Army Airborne School's I don't want to say laughable, but it was very easy for us.
Okay.
graduate from that. Now we're all airborne qualified. We come back to San Diego and report to our SEAL team. Now that has been changed. We teach our own guys how to jump out of airplanes.
Okay.
And then we also teach them how to skydive and free fall and the full gamut of any air operations. You go through more extensive training in land warfare, demolitions, shooting, so forth, more diving, all that. It's almost like, and SEAL training is actually called BUDS, Basic Underwater Demolition / SEAL Training. So mm-hmm. SQT is like BUDS 2.0. It lasts about 4 or 5 months. At the end of that, if you're successful, because you can still be weeded out.
They're still weeding out even there with those 18 guys that we have left.
Right. Okay. So out of those 18 guys, one or two is going to mess up, get in trouble, get in a bar fight, do something. If anything, you know, you mess up out on liberty. If you can't, you know, handle your free time, we don't want to bring you into the community and let you handle something way more important.
Yeah, good point.
So roughly 15 or 16 guys will get to the end of SQT. And on a bright sunny day, they'll all stand in front of the commanding officer, and he's going to give them the SEAL insignia. You know, a bright, shiny.
What a moment that must be.
It's a big day. It's a big day. When I got mine, it was handed to me by the commanding officer of SEAL Delivery Vehicle Team 1, who this gentleman later went on to become our first four-star admiral mm-hmm. as a SEAL. But he took mine and tossed it into the San Diego Harbor, and we all had to go swim for it. There was only four of us getting ours. And
it just does not end there either.
Right.
That's funny.
After you get out of SQT, these 15 guys will have orders in hand that'll say, report to SEAL Team 1, SEAL Team 5, SEAL Team 3. And they'll go to their team. When they get to their team, they've already been assigned a platoon or a task unit or something, and then their SEAL Team level training starts. And they'll train up for 12 to 18 months with a given platoon or task unit before they can even deploy. And then when they deploy, it depends on what their teams have been assigned.
Mm.
But it takes, from start to finish, it's roughly 3 years to make a usable, operable SEAL. And that's if you get it right the first time every time.
Right, and like you said, lots of dollars have gone into that person. So
they say about 2.5 million.
Yeah, I would believe it.
Per guy.
With all the skill sets that you have at this point.
And that's just your SEAL training. I went to Evan Rude and Johnson Outboard Motor Mechanics School. I've been to language school, all kinds of air operations schools, shooting schools, demo schools, all these.
The training keeps continuing.
Constantly. And I retired earlier this year after almost 25 years, but 24 in the SEAL teams. But even 2 years ago, I was going through additional training, and it never stops.
Well, yeah, and with technology changing, I'm sure that's changing with the SEALs as well.
Innovate or die.
Innovate or die.
Yep. That
Boy, that'll make you embrace technology.
Well, it'll make you embrace change. And sometimes it's not technology.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. So, we'll finish up here because there's so many other things to talk about. But when you go to SEAL Team 1, 2, or 3, like you were saying, so now you're a SEAL, are you then, get into the mission? Is that when the missions begin?
I know you can't talk
a lot about the mission, I understand that, and we can kind of finish here. But is that where...
That's where it'll happen.
That's where it happens. Finally.
There's been a lot of movies out recently.
Yeah.
And,
Zero Dark Thirty,
Zero
of course,
Dark Thirty,
yeah.
Uncommon Valor,
right?
These other movies, cool movies. When I came into the teams, it was beat into us, virtually and literally. Do not talk about what you do.
Yeah,
it's nobody's business but your loved ones and those around you and U.S. State Department. And a lot of guys will agree with me. We're not happy with the certain. You know, there's movies and books and everything being
written
out right now. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think in the future it's gonna be a detriment to the community. But
mm-hmm.
And it may have already happened. I don't know. But, you know,
well, probably threatens somewhat security, I would think.
Right. You know, anytime a SEAL team guy's name gets out, an active duty SEAL team guy's name gets out into the public and it's known that he did a certain operation, I mean, it puts him and his family and his friends at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of bad people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's always going to happen. And I think that's going to be an ebb and flow
mm-hmm.
in the community. And things will quiet back down and you know, I don't want to say we'll go back into hiding, but somebody on the news said it, time to put the Ferrari back in the garage.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to get into the missions, and we want to get into really what you're doing now. And actually, you have 14 years experience in triathlons. I can see why, well, maybe you want to talk about it, but what led you to the whole triathlon community and endurance sports?
It seemed
to almost be obvious, because after what you went through, it would seem like an Ironman wouldn't be... well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, there's a Bob Babbitt. He's one of the founding fathers of Ironman. Said it best once. He goes, if you can run, jump, or swim, you have our skill set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all had it at one point as kids. To me, I mean, triathlon is just, it's fun if nothing else. And if you're not having fun with it, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're a pro athlete and you're making money at it, you know, whatever. But the biggest thing I like about triathlon, it so genuinely mimics real life, that in the sense that if you have a good race or a bad race, it's your fault. If you've earned it, then you get to reap the rewards. If you didn't do all the training, you're going to suffer on race day. And the bigger the race is, the bigger that potential is, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that aspect of it.
Well, it seems like you like to push yourself.
Right.
And whatever limit there is, you want to see how far you can go. And I think the Ironman would be the ultimate, I would think, at least in terms of endurance sports.
Right. Well, I believe I haven't found the ultimate yet.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I think I have a limit, I tend to walk right past it. And that's always fun to do. And people do it a lot of times every day in their life, you know.
Right.
You'll hear people say, well, I can't run a 5K. I can't run 3.1 miles because, well, I have a knee injury or I have this or I have that.
Right.
Well, then they do something. They do one or they do this. I never thought I'd run an Ironman. My first triathlon was on a bet. it's called the Super Frog Triathlon. It was started. It's the longest running half Ironman in history, sponsored by the SEAL teams in San Diego, because it was in response so that SEAL team guys could train up and go do the Hawaiian Ironman back in the day.
Mm.
And it's been going ever since. Everybody's like, well, you're a good swimmer.
You know what? Before we get into the Hawaiian Ironman, how long is an Ironman exactly? So let's talk about what it is.
That's a great question. People, when they hear the word triathlon, they instantly think of the Hawaiian Ironman.
Right.
The grueling pictures of Julie Moss crawling across the finish line, you know, in 1981 or
mm-hmm,
two.
Mm-hmm.
An Ironman is a distance of a triathlon. A triathlon is a swim, bike, run, endurance event.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sprint. They have ultra sprints even shorter than that. A sprint, an Olympic distance, a half Ironman, Ironman distance. They even have deca Ironmans, which are 10 Ironmans back-to-back. A single Ironman.
Well, let's first of all talk about the Ironman. Boy, we could go off on that.
Right.
Holy moly. But anyway, an Ironman itself.
Ironman is a 2.4-mile swim.
Okay, let's think of lengths, because, you know, most people will swim a few lengths in the pool or whatever. What is that roughly?
In lengths, it is 4,200 yards. What is that?
Oh, geez. Okay. So it's
84 laps.
Wow. We're looking at hundreds of lengths.
164
yeah,
lengths. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
I'm not real good at math.
Yeah, but anyway, that puts it in perspective.
Right.
It's a hell of a long swim. Yeah.
At the Hawaiian Ironman, the average finish time is about an hour for the swim. So
okay.
2.4-mile swim, you get out. You're typically nowadays you're wearing the same clothes. You just jump into your cycling shoes, put on a helmet, and get on your bike, and then you ride 112 miles nonstop. Yeah, you may stop and refuel with water. They have aid stations.
Is it the extra 12 miles after the 100 that kills you?
You know, typically
psychologically, it's just saying, man, I made 100. 100, really 12 more to go.
Well, you think you're almost there when you hit 100, but by 80 or 90 miles, I'm ready to run. I'm ready to get off the bike.
I would think so, yeah.
The certain parts of your nether regions are tired of sitting on that little seat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you finally get back to town. You get back to transition two, and you jump off your bike, you jump into your running shoes, don't forget to take your helmet off, and then you take off and you run a marathon, a 26.2-mile run. And I use run loosely because, after all that, sometimes it's not a run, it's a walk.
Mm-hmm.
But the pros in this sport will run that marathon at almost Olympic qualification standards.
Jeez.
They'll run a 240 marathon, and I think Olympic qualification standards are 220. But they run faster off the bike than I can run a straight marathon at. And I'm a pretty fast age group athlete, but they're light years beyond what I could do.
What's the like a record for a Hawaiian Ironman, or you know, not exactly, but would be an outstanding time?
An outstanding time is about 8 hours, 8:05, I think.
Swimming, biking, and running,
all of it together.
It's just a work day.
8:03. Yeah, okay. It's only not even a full day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's only 8 hours. The you know, I've been fortunate. I took right to Ironman. I qualified for the world championship in my first race.
This is no surprise after listening to your story. When the SEAL training, mentally too. It
took a lot of convincing, and
because you've actually said that you like the elements to be bad.
I do.
Now most athletes would disagree with that, but you like that.
Well, when it comes to Ironman or triathlon in general, but if it's hard, it's hard for everybody.
Right.
So the ones who are going to do better are the ones who've prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when it's hot and windy or rainy. Kristen, my partner and girlfriend, she just did Ironman Lake Tahoe, and I was so jealous. It was hands down the hardest Ironman race I've ever seen. And
tell me about it.
Kristen gets cold in a hot shower. She hates cold conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It snowed the day before this race in Lake Tahoe, which I'm giggling inside, and she's kind of freaking out. She's an outstanding athlete. So on race morning, the air temperature, the air temperature was 34 degrees. And again, I'm so jealous. I'm like, oh man, I love it when it's like this. And it's beautiful. You know, Lake Tahoe is
probably the water temperature, even though it's like 45, probably feels wonderful.
Well, the water temp was actually 60 or 62, something like that. So it was nice.
And one in a wetsuit too, kind of cozy.
Right.
Okay.
So that day was extremely
cozy might
hard.
Be the wrong word.
Yeah. It's all relative.
Yeah.
So on that day, 2,900 registered athletes only netted 1,700 that actually finished the race, 1,730 or so.
Wow.
Very, very hard race.
Just grueling.
You know, you're at 6,200 feet of elevation. There's some hill climbs. In World Triathlon Corp, who owns Ironman, if a race doesn't sell out, typically they won't continue the race after more than 3 or 4 years. I hope they continue this race, though, because it's...
So that's one that you haven't done.
I haven't done it.
And I would think Hawaii would be a heck of a lot more pleasant.
It can be, absolutely. It can be.
Possibly.
It can be hell, too.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, we have so much more to talk about, Marty. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I want to talk about amphibian multisport, too. Thanks so much. Be right back. And that, of course, is Survivor, theme from Rocky, and the Eye of the Tiger. And if you've been listening to our interview, or if you're just joining us, we're talking to Marty Taylor, a Navy SEAL who definitely has been in the Eye of the Tiger. And we're just also talking about, besides your experience as a Navy SEAL, your experience as a triathlete, and now you're going into another venture, or actually I should say it's a new facility, amphibian multisports. Talk a little bit about that, and you're going to have a new opening coming up too, I understand.
That's correct. We started our original business about a year ago on November 1st. We had a small facility. It was basically just a warehouse. We had some CompuTrainers, which are computerized bike trainers, and treadmills in a strength area. Myself and Kristen McCarthy, my partner and girlfriend, as athletes, we've done.
And she's the one you were talking about who just did the Lake Tahoe.
Ironman.
Ironman, exactly.
Correct. Between the two of us, we probably have a couple hundred races in triathlons, running, cycling, just any kind of race. And I tell people this all the time. I'd race a one-legged, blind 90-year-old man if you wanted to race. I think it's fun. I like to race. So we've been all over the country in parts of the world. We've seen a lot of different training facilities, been to a lot of races, and there was always a piece or a part missing. A business would dub itself as a one-stop shop for triathletes or this or that or the other, and they'd be missing a part. So we decided to stick our toe in the water last November, open a training facility, and see what the feel in the area was. The response was overwhelming. Our opening night, we had about 80 people show up in this little bitty warehouse in Libertyville.
Mm-hmm.
We had enough members to fully support ourselves financially at that place, and right away we started looking for a new, bigger location, see what we could do with it. We settled on what was an old Blockbuster building, and we walked in. We actually turned the place down the first couple of times. We thought, well, it's too big, it's this. It just didn't seem to fit. The location was great. Until Kristen, and it, as a joke, we're standing in there talking to the building manager, and she goes, this place is big enough, we could put a pool in it. And that's how it started out. And I pulled my tape measure out and started looking.
By the way, I've been to that Blockbuster. It's on 176 Milwaukee Avenue. It's no longer there. And the thought of putting a pool in there was, wow, you really have to be inventive and creative. But I did see your facility, or at least the construction right now. And, it definitely could be done.
Yes.
No problem.
And, it was a mind bender. We had to really think about everything that was going to be coming. And there was so much more than We understand why it's never been done before, and we looked all over the country for a place similar to it, and we couldn't find one. So, anyways, we're very excited about it because this is going to be a one-stop shop for folks like us. Our number one thing is we want to be completely inclusive. We have the ability to...
This isn't just for Ironman.
It's not just for
Ironman. Otherwise, you can come in if you've never done a triathlon before, kind of thinking about it, or just want to get in shape, but... Let's say you're thinking about doing maybe a sprint,
right?
Which is, if I'm not mistaken, is a half-mile swim, 13-mile bike, give or take, and then 5K, doable. But at the same time, you should have some training for that.
Right. And, you know, a lot of folks say, well, I've got a mountain bike or I've got this. You know, they're more worried about their bike. They see all the carbon fiber and all the high-tech and the big price tags, you know, on a $5,000 bike or something like that. You don't need that to start the sport.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it on a single-speed Huffy if you had to. And
or your old Schwinn you were talking about when you first saw Top Gun and decided to be a Navy SEAL.
It all starts somewhere. And those are our favorite kinds of athletes. Because that's where the passion really lies. You take somebody who's had some bad races and some good races and whatnot, but that's who we really invite because we like to see them blossom. And the sense of community in the shop, I mean, we're building it, but our athletes are what really make our business and will grow our business successful.
Sounds exciting. That's multi-sport.
Amphibian.
Okay, and boy, oh boy, this has been one fast hour, Marty Taylor. I can't thank you enough, man. This has just been the best. Really, thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it.
Wish we had more time. Really do. Thank you. By the way, if you'd like to contact Marty Taylor or learn more about Amphibian Multisport, go to the website info@amphibianmultisport.com. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.